available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to another Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the Scout.com network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout.com network. And we are the Podcast of Champions, talking Pac-12 football. And I know we haven't done a show in three months. Oh, wait. No, wait. We did a show a couple days ago, Dave.
We haven't done a show in 2 days. That's what we haven't done. But we're back, and we're happy to be back.
We're making up for some missed times in the dark times of March and April where there were no shows.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just we protest basketball season. That's what our story is going to be. We just protest basketball season. And now we're firmly out of that territory. We are in a whole new month, a whole new year. It's May. We're effectively in the 2017 football season.
We're going to do questions today, which should be fun. So we got a whole bunch of questions. We're going to try to answer all of them to the best of our ability. If you want to send us a question about the Pac-12 footballs, anything, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. That is our email address. You can tweet us. And we do get a lot of tweets, at Pac-12podcast. Our website where you can find all the shows is Pac-12podcast.com. And then our voicemail line if you want to leave us a voicemail. We got a couple of those today. Actual voicemails. 641-715. Yeah, that's pretty good. 641-715-3900, extension 734-972. We're on the iTunes. We're hosted on Audio Boom. Please go into iTunes and leave us some positive feedback, a 5-star rating. That would be wonderful. Because, you know, that helps propagate the show to other Pac-12 football fans.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally, it's going to be a lot of fun here today answering everyone's questions.
I think it will be, Dave. There was a little lull, so we got some questions in our downtime, but there's some interesting topics, and I think there's some questions maybe we'll use for later shows, because I don't know what it is, but you do a podcast for Bro, I do one for USCFootball.com. I don't get a lot of the, like, name these top 20 in history kind of like this, and for whatever reason, people love to give us those kind of, if you did a research for 3 weeks, you'd be able to answer this question kind of question.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a little food for thought in some of those. There's one question that we might actually turn into a podcast of its own at some point from Clayton, USC class of 2011, third generation Trojan. He asked about how the different rivalries in the Pac-12 were formed, and that's a really good, you know, that could be a really good starting point for a lot of discussion with our, different team sites and everything, but, not something we're perfectly equipped to answer without doing, you know, buckets of research. I don't even know if buckets is like the perfect descriptor for research. I obviously didn't like do a lot in school, so I don't think research is quantified in buckets, but we'll be doing buckets of research.
Buckets and buckets of research. Yeah. Well, maybe do we have any business to take up before we jump into questions?
No. Oh, I don't think there's a damn thing going on anywhere in the world.
Oh, the one thing I wanted to bring up, we do skip basketball season because neither Dave or I like to talk about it too much. Dave probably more because, you know, UCLA's got way more of a basketball tradition than USC. And, you know, USC's got some guys coming back. So there's a little bit of excitement there, but the Lonzo Ball stuff is kind of fascinating. I don't know if you want to share any thoughts on that, Dave. It just seems like it's in the news like every day.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing I can remember seeing from a guy going into the draft. It's not even Lonzo. I mean, he's a pretty nice kid, pretty normal kid actually for everything else going around him, but his dad is just he's doing it differently is I think the best and easiest way to put it, but charging $495 for some basketball shoes is just out of this world. If you can hear in the background, my children have arrived.
Yeah, your daughter doesn't seem very happy about that price tag of those shoes.
No, she is not happy about the $495. She was hoping to get them for more like $495. I will say this. The shoes actually look pretty good.
Yeah.
Now, if like 100,000 people don't buy them immediately, they're probably going to be made out of cardboard, but they look pretty good.
The, I thought I saw like a report that they said they probably sold like 300 or less than that on the first day. So probably not what the goal was.
No, no. I think they probably wanted to do at least, I would think probably at least 100 times that, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
I think that's usually the goal for these, you know, early releases of much talked about shoes. I don't know. Not a shoe guy, but 300 on the first day is probably not going to, you know, set your brand afire.
It was funny. I was thinking about that. He's always on, the dad's always on like Colin or different show. Like they're always on different shows, you know, he gets a lot of publicity for all this stuff. So, I mean, he's doing something right when it comes to that. But I was thinking about it, like, you know, you don't really hear $500 sneakers a lot, but women's shoes, that's like mediocre $500, right? Like if you're going to talk about expensive shoes. So it's kind of funny. Like, yeah, you know, women pay a lot for shoes.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, that's probably a fair point. I mean, what's the most you've ever paid for a pair of shoes?
Really? I am not a big shoe guy. Like if it was $100, like that would be the most I would have ever, like.
Yeah, I think I might be sitting at like $90.
Okay. Yeah.
Like $90 for like a decent pair of dress shoes that I probably bought. But yeah. Other than that, I like to stick in like the $30 to $40 range.
Yeah. I'm same boat. I'm in, yeah, exact same boat.
Yeah. No, that's our speed here. But, more power to him if he wants to go the independent route. Maybe if, you know, if Lonzo tears it up in the summer league and then, you know, goes and has a tremendous rookie year, maybe those sales will start picking up. I would not want to be the proud owner of one of the first pairs of shoes that's produced, though. I'd have a little bit of trepidation about wearing those things.
Yeah. Well, I apologize in advance if we get a whole bunch of basketball questions now. That was not my intent, but there was one thing I was thinking about. I'm like, that is kind of interesting.
Yeah. That's as much basketball we're going to talk for the next 8 months.
All right. So I guess we should jump into – let's do the – there's an interesting voicemail question that I tweeted out about, and we did get a bunch of responses. So we'll kind of give our thoughts and read some of the responses and just talk about this subject. But I'll play this for you, Dave, and then we'll get your thoughts.
Sure.
Enjoy the podcast. You're looking for creative ideas? I was wondering if you could do a recap of how to have the best road trip at each of the 12 venues. I'm going to Washington State, for example, or to UW. What are the absolute must-dos as part of a road trip? Thank you. Enjoy the show.
And then I think I screwed that up a little bit, Dave, because I was just asking people what their favorite road trip was, and his question was more specific, like, what's your favorite thing to do on each road trip?
He asked us another research question is what he did.
Yeah.
And I'm always down to do some buckets of research. I haven't done any, but I think we can talk a little bit about some of our stuff. I mean, I think L.A. is a kind of tough one, I think, for USC and UCLA because there's so many different things you can do. I mean, I think if you stick in sleepy Pasadena, it's a little bit limited for going to UCLA to the Rose Bowl, but If you're opening yourself up to the entire LA area, it's hard to even, you know,
yeah,
nail that down to a couple of things to do.
People ask me a lot. I got a text today, Dave, from our friend Taylor Estes, who works for the Orange Blood site, and she's actually from Orange County, but she was telling me, you know, I never really went to LA when I was in Orange County growing up there. Like she's Mission Viejo High School, but she went to school at Austin, and she was asking me like, well, where should I stay? Cause Texas plays USC this year. And where is that near Hollywood? I'm like, you lived out here. You don't even know what's going on. So there's a million things you could do. Do you want to stay in Santa Monica? Do you want to stay in like Manhattan Beach? Do you want to stay in Hollywood? Or where? I mean, it's like a whole different, you know, and if you have a car, there's just so many factors, when you come to LA, it's just very different.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would probably be interesting to, you know, do it from like the traveling perspective, but it's hard to get into that mindset since we both went to school in LA. Every football game we ever went to at the Coliseum or at the Rose Bowl was essentially a home game where we were just, you know, traveling 10 miles. So it's a little bit tough to, I always have this trouble when somebody's visiting in LA, I'm really bad at showing them around, like
really?
Terrible, because yeah, there's a lot to do, but it's like, I don't want to go to Hollywood. Who wants to actually go to Hollywood? And so, yeah, I always run into that where I'm just like, maybe we just hang out in this like 3-block radius around where I live. How does that sound?
That's funny. I love playing tour guide, and maybe because I didn't move here until college. But I like taking people to like Hollywood and Highland, or you know, walk up and down Rodeo Drive, stuff by Sprinkles. Certainly Venice, the boardwalk is cool. Anyway, I mean, I just love doing stuff like that. Showing people around LA is just kind of fun.
Yeah, this is why people don't visit me. This is fundamentally why. So we're kind of punting on that answer, but there's just so much to do.
What's the Didi Reese? I love that. Like when you're talking like Westwood stuff.
But like that's not even going to a football game. That's going to UCLA, which is 30 miles from the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean Didi Reese, it's a great cookie place, and you know, ice cream sandwiches. Sandwich between two cookies
for like a buck, like it's crazy.
We've often had talks about what kind of front they're running there, because there's no way they're turning a profit, because they've got like at any given time they've got like 9 people working, and they're charging $1. Like I think it's like $1.50 now for like one of those sandwiches, and it's wild. The bar scene is ever changing in Westwood. I think Maloney's was one of the old bars, but now it is, I don't even know what the name of it is anymore, because I still call it Maloney's. But there's, you know, it's just kind of it's probably, if you're one of the older crowd who, you know, went to school at any Pac-12 institution in the 80s and you went to Westwood, it's probably a little bit different now. It's a little bit more of a retail heaven, and a little bit more chainy, but, yeah, Westwood's cool, and USC is fun. There's a Chick-fil-A there.
There is.
There's the 9-0. There's all kinds of good stuff.
The 9-0, if you want, the kind of college bar, I would go there. If you want good, local Mexican food, it's on Vermont. La Barca is awesome. That's a really good place.
Or you can do what most USC students do anyway and just go to Westwood.
You could go there. Lots of great restaurants. I love the little carts, the hot dogs wrapped in bacon, those are pretty awesome. I always get those. But if you're downtown, Philippe's, if you the French dip sandwiches, they were the inventor of it. It's just, so it's not super close to USC, it's a few miles away, but that's always a good one to kind of go, and check out. And if you want to take the train, there's a direct one from Culver City to the Coliseum. It's hard. The train's just weird around here. You're driving somewhere, but if you stayed in Culver City, you could take a train directly in to the Coliseum. So that's, if you're traveling in, that might be an interesting thing. I love some Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles up in Pasadena too. If you're up near the Rose Bowl, that's a good one. There's tons of places in Pasadena though.
Yeah, can't complain about Pasadena. There's a lot of places to eat. There's good places for breakfast burritos before early morning tailgates. I think Lucky Boy is one of them. And there's plenty of good stuff. So I heartily recommend anybody who has the opportunity to go watch a football game in LA to do it, because especially going to the Rose Bowl, a lot of fun. Yeah. Very beautiful sights and sounds.
The Bay Area, similar, you know, where it's like you're talking about Berkeley and Palo Alto. I mean, there's where are you going to, you know, do most people stay in Palo Alto if you're going to the Stanford game? No, people stay in San Francisco. It's just a whole bunch of options there, and they're all usually really expensive. But that's a frequent road trip for the LA people that do a weekender kind of trip up there. And when I tweeted that out, that was one of the more common things, the weekender, that's what, people like to go do. But there's definitely a lot of fun things there, but it's not like going to Boulder. Like if you were going to Palo Alto, there's just a zillion places you could stay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, the Bay Area trip in general is probably the one I've done the most frequently, but the one I've probably done the worst, because it's generally especially when I was in school, I did it with, you know, I would go stay with friends of mine from high school or that sort of thing who were, you know, Cal students or who were Stanford students or whatever. And generally when you're doing it kind of the college style, you lose a little bit of the see the nightlife, see the things, enjoy all this fun stuff. You're kind of just staying in apartments and going to some crappy dive bar near campus. But that's its own kind of fun.
Yeah. We used to do, when I was in school, there was like three bars in San Francisco called like the Triangle, like people would frequent. And I don't know if they're all still there. It's funny. One of my guys that was an engineer with me in college, we were friends. And then like the girls that we were friends with, they ended up, Ty and Mary, they ended up getting married by meeting on the Weekender, like 10 years or something, like after college, you know, like, so they had known each other in college or friends and everything, but they just, you know, didn't see each other for years and years, but both had happened to be on the Weekender and ran into each other and then like hooked up and got married. And they've been married for like 15 years now or something. It's kind of crazy. So like post-college Weekender marriage, Dave. So that's a pretty good road trip, I'd say.
Yeah. If you can turn it into a marriage, that's got to count for something. So, I mean, the Bay Area in general has been a pretty fun trip. I guess the one I've done most frequently after that is probably both of the Arizona schools, again, because it's fairly reasonable driving distance from L.A. Tempe's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mill Ave. That's all you need to know is Mill Ave. You go to Mill Ave in Tempe.
Yeah. I spent my 21st birthday on Mill Ave. At one point, I was shirtless with my belt around my neck on a stage, not by choice.
Okay.
That was my 21st birthday.
Well,
and that was immediately after covering a UCLA. I think it was probably a UCLA lost to Arizona State, because that's generally what they did.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like you had a professional time after the game.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was certainly interesting. Tucson is it's a city in Arizona. It's a place where Arizona plays football. I've been there a time or 12. It's a place in the desert.
It is.
What are your thoughts on Tucson?
I think I've done it twice. If you're if you like young attractive ladies, there's certainly a plethora of them. Which is, you know, not a bad thing. Same thing with Arizona State. The Arizona, you know, as far as girls go, I'm probably giving it to the Arizona schools. I don't know what you would say, Dave.
Yeah, I think that's 100% accurate.
With, the weather's hotter, so you got to wear sundresses more often. I went to the Waste Management, golf tournament over, Super Bowl. And I think it was like every ASU student, you know, sorority girl was out there just get drunk and stuff. You're like, this is crazy. Like, I don't think I could live in Arizona and be married. Like, this, it would be like, it's too tempting or something. Like, there's crazy stuff everywhere.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of San Diego State writ large. Oh. Actually, old school San Diego State, because new San Diego State's actually moving up in the world. But
really?
Old party school San Diego State. It's got a little bit of that statewide.
I'm trying to think of any specific, like, venues. Like, you know, there's just so much in Tempe and, you know, the Scottsdale. I mean, like, if you like going golfing, I mean, there's just, that's like a, you know, boys trip weekends you can do there. Like, there's a lot of fun.
We're terrible at answering this question.
Yeah, I think it's not too bad. You know, we did mention on the on the Palo Alto side, like, there's some cool stuff, like sushi bars and stuff, like downtown Palo Alto is kind of fun. For Cal, There's like a whole area there too where there's bars and stuff that are really neat. I don't have the names off the top of my head. So, but yeah, I mean, there are some cool like little local areas where maybe not the same thing with USC and UCLA because it, you know, it's like a little bit more spread out, but there are some cool kind of local spots that you would go like fairly near the stadium that you could go check things out.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we rank our road trips? Have we done this before on this?
I kind of feel like we did. But we could do it again. Well, we still got to talk about some of the other ones, right? Like,
yeah,
I've never been to Utah, so that's the one.
I've been to Utah. It's really gorgeous. If you get a chance to go, you should, because I mean the view from the stadium, it's just kind of, you've got this valley of mountains and you're just kind of in it. And it, especially if you can see a game, it's like say a 5 o'clocker and the sun is setting while the game is still being played. Just gorgeous. And Salt Lake City is actually kind of fun. There's some fun stuff to do there. There were actually a decent amount of bars. And I think Sunday, I think at that time Sunday was still a little weird. I'm not sure if it is anymore, but the day after the game was was not, you know, a time for bar hopping. But generally, it was actually a pretty fun trip. I haven't been to Boulder, and that's the one I really
Oh, you got to do that. Your favorite team, dude.
I know. I got to make my pilgrimage to the Mecca.
Yeah. I do want to check out Salt Lake City. I've been to Provo, and we've like hung out in like Park City and stuff, and it was weird. I remember that. Even in like Park City, like you had to get like a registration card to like go into a bar because you had to be like a member or something. And if you went to a liquor store, like it was like the lower floor, and you'd come out and it would be in a, you know, paper bag. It was like, it just felt like you're buying contraband when you're buying alcohol. It was a little weird, but that was several years ago. But I'd love to go. I need to go check out Rice Eccles. I need to see Utah.
Yeah. I recommend it. It's actually, you know, I was not looking forward to the trip to Salt Lake when I took it, but going was actually quite a bit of fun.
And then you want to talk about beauty, certainly going to Boulder, and, you know, you fly into Denver. There's just so many cool places. There's a ton, you know, if you're a beer guy, ton of like microbrew sort of stuff there. And, I, you know, Ralphie is one of the coolest traditions in college football. And it's a beautiful, you know, landscape there. And it's definitely a fun road trip. Very unique. There's like big city feel, but also kind of small town feel. It's just a really good one.
Yeah. I think it's probably my next one I'm most interested in doing. But then again, I've knocked off everyone else. The only one I haven't been to is Colorado.
That's funny. The only one I haven't done is Utah. So we'll have to remedy that, Dave.
We will.
So we got the South. We need to do the Pacific Northwest. Seattle's, it's a really fun trip. I mean, that's just awesome. Like that's a big city. The new stadiums are really cool. I love going up to Seattle. I don't know. What do you think, Dave?
The stadium, it's one of the coolest experiences. It's probably, so campus, if you get a chance when you go up, going to Washington's campus, I mean, I don't typically recommend going to campuses because they're all kind of similar, but Washington, it's probably my favorite campus in the Pac-12. It's just beautiful. The buildings are all cool. Something about, I think it, you know, raining 200 and some odd days a year up there, just makes everything look green and fresh. It's just a beautiful, beautiful campus. And then the stadium itself, with the ability to kind of boat up to the stadium, essentially, it's just something else. It's a really unique experience, I think, in the Pac-12.
There's only three stadiums in the country, and I've been to two of them that you can, you know, tailgate on the water, and that take a boat to the game, and people do it. You know, my wife went to Tennessee, so I've done that. Baylor's newer. They recently did that when they remodeled. And Washington. And I've done that a couple times. And we did a video report from there and interviewed a bunch of the people that are longtime Husky fans and, you know, hanging out on the boats. And we actually met a bunch of the people through this podcast. So it was a lot of fun. Like I think we requested something, and people like were emailing me and like, hey, come to check out our boat. And they were giving us food. And it was a really cool experience. And the weather was terrible. So there was less boats than there normally would be. So it's hard because it's kind of like these temporary docks and stuff that they put out there. But really fun experience and a lot of tradition, a lot of, you know, longtime Husky fans. If you do that for a road trip, that would be one of the coolest experiences, making sure you get on a boat and check out the game.
Yeah, that's probably the next time I do the Washington trip, I'm going to want to be on a boat.
Yeah.
I haven't done that before, and I feel like it's something to cross off the list.
Yeah, it's a bucket list one. So that's very cool. And you know, anywhere, you know, Seattle is just a great city to go to. You can check out the, you know, Space Needle, all the different stuff in Seattle. You want to go to Pike's Market? It's Pike's Market, I think, right? Or the first ever Starbucks and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's just tons of stuff, in Seattle. And if you want to go to Pullman, you're probably flying through Seattle at some point.
You can fly, I think you can fly direct to Spokane.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you want to do that, I think you can. But yeah, the first time I flew to Pullman, I flew into Seattle, and then we literally took a prop plane to Pullman, which I don't even think was necessary at the time. Like, I don't think that was like a thing. No, it wasn't even a prop plane to Pullman. It was a prop plane to Spokane. We took a prop plane from Seattle to Spokane, and it was weird, and it was loud. I say this, and I've probably said this on this podcast before, but the biggest key on the drive down from Spokane to Pullman is don't speed. Don't go even a mile over the speed limit the entire way, because it is all speed traps, especially on football Saturdays.
So a public service message if you're driving.
That was public service for everyone out there.
Yeah.
But Pullman's actually, I mean, it's kind of a, I mean, it's very much like in the quote unquote college town.
Yes.
School of thought. There's not a whole lot else there. But you always are fond of the Coug.
The Coug, I like, yeah.
Can you reflect on that a little bit?
The Coug is cool. The last time I went up there, I think it was like a couple years ago, and it was Halloween. And so one of my friends, her daughter, was like a senior at Washington State. So like, you're aging me. So, but I had known her since she was like a baby. So I went up there and like, checked out where she lived and stuff. And I like just trying to get a cab out of there. There's like three cabs working in the whole town. And it was a nightmare. Just walking around. I got back to my hotel as quick as I could. But, you know, we went to the Coug, got a burger and stuff, and it was fun. And, it's, you know, it's a neat little college town, and it's the sister city of Moscow, Idaho. I actually think I was staying in Moscow, Idaho. So, hey, if you've never been to Idaho, you make the trip to Washington State, you're going to get to see another state. So there's a positive.
Yeah. I knocked Idaho off my list when I was up there, and that probably the most productive thing I did on that trip. Oregon schools are only, as we learned in our last podcast when Ryan foolishly mixed up the geography, the Oregon schools are only about 20 miles apart, 15 miles apart, just down I-5 in the middle of Oregon. How would you describe Corvallis?
It's a smaller town too. You know, it's all about Oregon State. But I think there's definitely a passion for the school there. And I think it's kind of this weird thing, cause it's a Nike school too, but it's not, you know, Oregon's obviously the big Nike school, but they still feel like some pride in that. But you know, like your hated rival is the bigger, one, but like you go to the stadium, and it's loud and people are into it. There's just a lot of passion there for the Beavs. You see orange and black everywhere. And, it's not like, I don't have any like memorable places I'd like to go. I'd have to do a little bit more exploring there, but there is just a lot of passion for Oregon State.
Yeah. It's kind of more in the Corvallis, more in the Pullman, orb of, cities. Definitely not a Seattle.
Right.
I've only been to an Oregon State game when it was like a nooner, and this was when I was living in Portland, when I was summering up there for about 3 months in 2011. And there was a good spot to get breakfast. There were a couple of bars open. It was actually like kind of a pretty, I mean, Oregon State was not great at the time, and it was still like there was a lot of passion in the city, and a lot of the bars were full at like 11 a.m. before a nooner game, which was fun.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I like Corvallis, just fine. And then Eugene is sort of just it's more of like, it's probably a little less of a pure college town.
Yeah.
Gotten a little bit more Nike money. You can kind of see that around. it's probably a little bit more of its own thing. It's not, you know, completely dependent on the university. But it's really pretty. Eugene, the biggest takeaway I have from that is that it's just a kind of a gorgeous little town with tons of greenery and tons of green spaces and a nice little river going through it. Ben Howland used to like to sit down at a fireplace at this hotel on the river and talk between games on Pac-12 road trips.
Oh.
A former UCLA coach.
Yeah.
So that's Eugene for me.
That's Eugene. Yeah. It's funny. We go up there just about every year. I head up for the opening in Beaverton. So you kind of get up in that area, and it's just, you know, like you said, it's just green. It rains a lot. It's a beautiful, beautiful area, and it's like so Nike. Everywhere. But yeah, I think you described it well as far as Eugene being a little bit more of an independent thing. Corvallis does have a bit of that Pullman feel, but you're not like on the border of another state where you have like this little sister city or anything like that. But they do love their Beavs there, man. Like it's very popular, and, you can feel the passion when you go.
I will say this also, if you are flying into Portland and you are flying out of Portland and driving down to Corvallis or Eugene, allot some time after the game, because traffic getting back up I-5 and off of those kind of side roads can be a nightmare. I was probably a good 4 hours getting back from Corvallis one time after a game, that same time after a game. So allot yourself some time. Don't feel like that, you know, whatever Google Maps tells you it is, it's like an hour and a half is going to be accurate after a game. It won't be.
Well, we have, you want me to read some of the tweets that we got, and
sure,
we can kind of discuss, some of the stuff or whatever, from at Wax Packs. He would say, that would be any, so he likes any road trip. He said, well, not Westwood. So I think he's a USC fan.
That seems kind of like a, yeah.
Westwood's not really the road trip part, but I mean, I like going to Westwood. And like Dave said, most USC people seem to like.
Yeah, Westwood's fine. It's kind of going to Pasadena, though.
Our buddy Casey Cosgrove, he said the Weekender. Kevin Wade says, definitely not Pullman in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah, that one I can agree with. If you're going to go to Pullman, try to make sure it's a game that's scheduled in like early October or earlier.
USC plays Washington State on the road on a Friday night this coming year. So that should be an interesting one.
That should be a ton of fun.
Yeah. Like you do like a Corvallis on a Thursday night and everybody's drunk. Like that's a loud place to go. Well, at Pullman too, they redid their stadium. They've done a lot of upgrades too. I like it. The only thing is the press box, you're kind of in the end zone, at least where we were, you know, it's not like they have the 50 yard line stuff. It's not for the media. That's for the donors, I think.
Right.
Marvelous Marv says Autzen. So yeah, I mean, that's, you want to talk about a loud venue. That's definitely a good one. Sean, Ovalman, he says Weekender at Cal has to be my favorite one. Football Femme, she said, in order, Oregon, Washington, Utah, and she puts a little heart there. I know she used to work for the Utes. And if you're not from L.A., the Rose Bowl and Cali are college football musts.
Yeah, I would pretty much agree with that top three, I think. I would probably flip Washington and Oregon.
You'd rather do it? Yeah, I think that's a pretty awesome one. That might be my favorite one, Washington. Connie says, Coliseum, they're all road trips for this Kansas mama. So I guess she's on the road when she goes to home games for USC. And then Finkel, Eisenhorn says Seattle is a must. That's good. Yeah. I mean, Seattle's, like we said, we're both fans. We had, let's see, Bruin Girl, Dodging Bullets and Crime on the campus of University of South Central. So she's always got funny tweets. I don't know if you, do you know her or?
I don't know who that is, but, that's funny.
I think she likes me, but she'll take little shots. She takes shots at USC. She doesn't really take shots at me. Let's see what else we got. I think that might have been.
Ed Flanagan says Eugene, craft beer, Pinot Noir, Voodoo Donuts, and my son, who's a member of the Oregon Marching Band.
Oh, yes. Let's see.
Posted a nice picture.
Yeah, he did. There was a picture of him and his, look at that. He's got the highlighter yellow, jersey on and yellow hat, but he looks very proud dad there. So thanks for that one.
Proud dad.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I think we're both Pacific Northwest fans.
It is fun. I mean,
as most people should be. It's really beautiful up there and it's a great place to visit. As Brandon Huffman will tell you though, living up there when it's raining 200 plus days a year, pretty crazy pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's, and that's what's cool about the Pac-12. It's just you're talking about, you could be in Boulder or Salt Lake City, you're like in the Rocky Mountains, or you're up in the Pacific Northwest and going salmon fishing or something, or you're in going to Hollywood. I mean, there's just like a wide range. You're in the desert. I mean, it's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it for sure is.
Do you want to do, we have it's kind of a long voicemail question we can do about quarterbacks, or do you want to do some email questions first? How do you want to handle this?
Yeah, let's dive into an email question.
Okay.
This is from Otis. Hi, Ryan and David. which coach, Pete Carroll or Chip Kelly, do you think changed the college landscape more?
Very interesting. Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Go first.
I'm going to go with Chip Kelly because I see what – I know Pete Carroll, I mean, obviously great success, but I don't know – he had a different style. He said practices should be open. Media, whoever, fans, come on out and watch. If you can figure out what I'm doing and use it against me, more power to you. He was very open about all that stuff. And I've seen coaches go completely the other direction since then. So I don't think people bought into, hey, it worked for me, Carroll, it's going to work for us. And he was more of a defensive minded guy, even though they had, you know, really prolific offenses and stuff. He changed the way things were done at USC. I don't know how much he changed the entirety of college football. Where, you know, I think that Chip Kelly, you're seeing elements of what he did and the running as many plays as you can. And I think he changed the landscape a little bit more than Pete Carroll, even though he didn't have the same kind of, you know, championship type of success that Pete Carroll had.
Yeah. I probably agree with all of that. I think, just the transformative effect of that offense and just that style of play. I mean, it's guys are still doing that. I mean, it's still kind of the nature of most of the most prolific offenses in college football. If you go back and watch those USC teams, and it doesn't seem like that long ago, but if you go back and watch them, it's like under center, like 90% of the time.
Yeah.
It is a traditional offense. And they just run it because they've got talent. But I mean, those teams were mostly built on kind of a really, really awesome defense. And then that really, they were able to run a pro style scheme in college and run it well. But I don't think anything of that was necessarily transformative schematically. And then if you look at kind of coaching trees, I don't think we've really seen what Chip Kelly's is going to look like yet, but Pete Carroll's has been, you know, Kiffin, Sarkisian, Ed Orgeron. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, I would say. You know, no like true like superstars in that bunch. So it's, you know, I think time will tell on that one. But I think just based off of the offenses we're seeing in college football and the effect that his offense had, I think I'd have to give it to Chip.
Yeah, I think Pete Carroll changed a lot of things at USC by the recruit, you know, changing how you recruit and putting so much emphasis on recruiting and getting these guys and putting guys in the NFL and using that as a recruiting tool. And like you said, more traditional, like really running an offense that you see in the pros or defense that you see in the pros, kind of a 4-3. He didn't like run some, you know, 4-2-5. He didn't run some kind of strange defense that, you know, was changing things up or pick a new offense like wishbone. I mean, it was more like kind of traditional stuff, just did it better and had better talent, you know, better pieces kind of putting it all together. So yeah, I would, as far as changing the game, you know, and like I said, if more people would have been like, you know what, screw it, practices are open because, then I would have changed my answer. But that's one thing that's kind of annoying is that the college coaches are just putting more of a lockdown on things and being more just Nazi-ish about, can't let any information ever get out. No one can see anything. Which I just don't think it matters if you do.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the overabundance of secrecy in college football is just, you know, it's a peek inside the mindset of all these guys and that they're mostly insane, but, it doesn't make much sense. I mean, it's not like anyone's reinventing the wheel. Even Chip Kelly's offense wasn't built on any super complexity. It was built on simplicity. Just run really fast. And so I think it's all just a bunch of guys trying to be self-important when they practice and do all that crap.
And you figure things out. I mean, like Chip Kelly did some brilliant things. Like he would not sub, like if he's on, you know, the near sideline and the play ends on the near sideline, you know, you could substitute and you could get guys in quicker than the guy, you know, the defense could, because they have to go all the way across the field. I mean, he would play games like that, but that's stuff you see in a game and then other people can copy it or they can change the rules or whatever. So, I mean, there's only so much secrecy before you actually play and then people figure out what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to do the voicemail question? Cause I think we're tapped out on email questions.
Really? There wasn't more? Okay. Here, I'll play this one for you.
Hello, Ryan and David. This is Don Green here in Colorado country, Buffalo country. I'm just calling. You had mentioned your latest podcast that you needed some ideas on what topics to talk about. One topic that I would hope to have your, you know, your feedback on is some classes for the Elite 11, previous classes. And one class that, to me, stands out is the 2014 class, which has notable players that we, you know, are current in current rosters. Just I'm going to give you the reference name, and you, obviously you'll be able to know some of the players, and they have transferred, and I just wanted to get your take. Number one is Blake Barnett, who went to Alabama but is currently transferring to Arizona State. Ben Hicks at Houston, Travis Walker at Oregon, Kyler Murray at Texas A&M. I believe he's also transferring. Brady White is currently at Arizona State. Drew Luck from Missouri. Jarrett Stidham, Texas Tech. Ricky Town at USC, which obviously transferred. DeAndre Francius, I'm not sure if I pronounced it correct, Florida State. Brandon Winbush, sorry, Penn State. And Josh Rosen at UCLA. These are went from number 1 to number 11, the ones, the players that were picked. But of notable mention is another player that did not make the 11 team, and that's our current USC quarterback, Sam Darnold. Again, thank you for your time, and I'll hear you on the podcast. Thanks.
All right. So I think it is interesting to look back at the group of 2014 Elite 11 guys.
Yeah, I have the list. If you want to, I could list them off one by one, and we can.
Got to pull up too. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of looking at it. I mean, a lot of these guys have already started games in college, which is actually pretty impressive because these are only 3 years out. I mean, sometimes it takes a while for guys to develop, but. Did Barnett start last year at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, he started that first game, I believe, right?
Yeah. And then Barnett started, DeAndre Francois started, I'm not sure on Hicks, not sure on Johnson, but I think Drew Locke started, Kyler Murray has started games, Josh Rosen started games, Jarrett Stidham has started games. I think Brady White even started a game last year when all the injuries happened at Arizona State, and Brandon Wimbush is kind of the next big thing at Notre Dame.
So it's a pretty good group, you know?
Pretty good group. Pretty good group. I think, obviously, to his point, in retrospect, looking at especially the kind of attention he's drawing now, Sam Darnold's name would not have been amiss here. Like, it would have made sense to have him in this group. But yeah, I think the one that always is going to stand out is Ricky Town. It's interesting to hear Biggins and Huffman talk about him a little bit because he's a guy that they had very, very highly rated, I think, coming out of his sophomore year. And then just as he kind of developed, he lost a little bit on his arm, lost a little bit of arm strength, and then I think his confidence kind of got shot a little bit. And so he's bounced around quite a bit. He's probably the most interesting one on this for me. I think Blake Barnett, I think he's still got a ton of talent. It's just... A lot of people were saying at the time when he signed with Alabama, that's not a good fit for him. I mean, he's kind of a dual threat type. He is not a statue. He's going to stand back there and do what Alabama does. And yeah, they've kind of moved away from that a little bit, but, I don't know that he was ever a great fit there. I think he's a much better fit, out west at Arizona State. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on these guys?
Yeah. Barnett was the MVP, of that group. And, we saw him perform really well. What's he going to do at ASU now coming back, to the West Coast? It'll be interesting because he's, Arizona State has two of these guys on the roster. Brady White, like you said, out of Hart High School, he started, was it one or two games? I don't know. But he ended up getting hurt fairly quickly. Didn't he have a wide receiver? Who was the wide receiver that went to Stanford that was his favorite target in high school?
What's his face?
Man, I'm blanking on his name. Sorry.
Oh my God. Blonde.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It'll come to us in a second.
We should just cancel the podcast.
Because he's actually been a contributor at Stanford and stuff too. He was a dude that would catch
Trent Irwin.
He would catch everything in height, like everything thrown his way. He always caught.
Yeah, best hands I can remember seeing in high school.
So those two guys being interested, interesting. For Ricky Town, for people who don't know, he was like the first, you know, he committed to USC. He was a 5-star at some point. I think scout dropped him to a 4-star. And Steve Sarkisian picked up, Sam Darnold kind of later in the process. Sam Darnold was actually injured his junior year. So some of the recruiting stuff wasn't, cause he wasn't playing that year. You know, he wasn't, it wasn't going to be the, you know, on everybody's radar, and just started kind of tearing it up at San Clemente. And I went down to one of his high school games, like a playoff game, I think. And, he ran like every other play. You're like, dude, you can't keep doing that. You're going to get killed. But the coaches loved him, and Ricky Town was an early enrollee. And so he got in the spring football, looked a little overwhelmed. Summer workouts start, and that's when Sam Darnold joins. And within like a couple of weeks of just doing that, I think Ricky Town figured out that guy's way better than me. And so he ended up transferring out, after being early enrollee, having a head start on the quarterback that was coming in his same class. He's like, peace out. I'm out of here. And, went to Arkansas, and then every report we got from Arkansas was nothing about him. Like, it would be like, talk about 4 quarterbacks and none of them, they were talking about Ricky Town. So now I think he's transferred to like a JC or something, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he's supposedly at Ventura now, Ventura College.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens from there. I think, I mean, it's a shame to say, I think he's got to drop down a level. I mean, he's got to go look at kind of the more mid-majory type schools, I think, because he just, you know, is one of those guys who probably developed a little bit quicker than others, but then just, you know, the rest of everybody caught up to him as he went into his junior and senior years.
Jarrett Stidham's interesting, you know, going to Baylor, and now it's going to be at Auburn. I think he's going to end up being the starter there, from what I've, you know, read. But yeah, I remember well being up in Oregon watching all these guys at the opening, the Elite 11 thing, like, you know, Josh Rosen slinging it. Ricky Town actually played pretty well at the opening after starting. His team started like they lost every game, I think, and they were like in last place. And I think his coach was like Willie McGinnis. You know, they always have like football coaches. And usually you have there's 3 quarterbacks per team, and you'd play a half, and then so one quarterback wouldn't play a game, and then the next game he'd play the first half. And in the playoffs, they just let Ricky Town play like the entire time. And they went from last place all the way to the finals. So he actually played pretty well, and then lost in the finals. But I think he beat Rosen's team head to head. But I thought Rosen looked really good that week. Kyler Murray was pretty awesome that week, if you remember watching him and going to A&M. He ended up throwing to, now I'm blanking, who was the Arizona receiver? From Arizona, the receiver that was really good, Christian Kirk.
Yep.
He was throwing to him a lot, and they ended up went to A&M together. But Murray's now at Oklahoma. Let's see, who else was kind of interesting? I don't remember much about Francois, but he's,
Yeah, I don't remember him much. Wimbush I always liked. I don't remember Drew Walk that much. You know, the one mystery is Travis Johnson.
Yeah.
Travis Waller, because I think everybody liked him in high school quite a bit, and he hasn't, we haven't heard much of anything from him. It's sort of that, you know, that Ricky Town in Arkansas thing. Just haven't heard a peep from what's going on with him. Especially with all the quarterback troubles, it doesn't even sound like he's been thought of as a potential option, which is kind of a shock.
Yeah. It was Travis Waller, right? He used to be that?
It was Waller, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, I think Ben Hicks, I thought he had a pretty good arm. Ended up going to SMU. But yeah, it's a really, I mean, it's pretty good when you look at all these guys and you kind of know, even if you haven't followed them, just go through the list. You kind of know something about all of them. Like that's probably a pretty good group, you know, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I think comparing it to years past, I think it definitely holds up well, even with, you know, some of the disappointments, like Josh Rosen hasn't probably set the world afire the way some people would have expected. I mean, he was hurt most of last year. Kyler bounced around a little bit, but he's been effective when he's played. DeAndre Francois is looking pretty good. Blake Barnett's transferred. Brady White's played some games. I mean, it looks like a pretty good group. I think they're going to turn out to have been a pretty good group, and I think they'll, you know, hold up for the evaluation.
Is Winbush supposed to start this year, you think? Or
I don't think he is. I think it's what's his face? I think he's going to be the number two guy.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure.
You know, my favorite part of this is I'm not like, I don't know, I want to be nice about this. I liked what Josh Rosen did at the Elite 11. Like, he kind of got knocked by some of the coaches there because he wasn't like following the book, their plan, like this is how we do everything. And
he wasn't buying in.
Yeah. But I kind of like that because I feel like the way they act sometimes, like they act like what they say about quarterbacks is the not only the end all be all, but anyone else that's ever said anything about a quarterback should burn in hell because they're an idiot. It was just like this elitism feeling. I guess Elite 11, maybe that's where it comes from. But it's just this feel. And Rosen was basically like giving them, like flipping them off, like F you. Like, and I kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, they were trying to tell him to read a defense like this different way from how he was going to be reading it in college and how he read it in high school. And he's just like, there's no point in me figuring out how to do that when I'm going to be doing it a different way when I get to college. So let me just do it my way. And then he tore things up. But, I think it pissed off a lot of those coaches.
I know at least one of the big name coaches is no longer with ESPN. Does that change the Elite 11 now or?
I can't imagine. I mean, I think the brand is strong enough that even with Dilfer gone, I don't think they're gonna change things up too much. I think they'll just get somebody else to do it.
I wonder if Dilfer would still do it. It's just not, he's not an ESPN employee. I don't know. Yeah, maybe he's still running it. I'm not sure.
That's a good question.
I would, because it's not like an ESPN thing.
Yeah, I think it's through student sports, is it not?
Yeah, and then they still broadcast it. You know, it's like part of the Nike thing. So I would bet he's still kind of running that. He's just not going to be like the on-air personality for ESPN anymore.
Right. Yeah. And he was the one who had some issues with Dear Josh about how he was buying in.
So I think he ranked Josh like 11th out of the 11 or something because of that. It's like, dude, that's just stupid. Like,
Yeah. Like, I mean, rank him third or whatever, fifth or just somewhere in the middle, but 11th, you're just making a point.
So anyway, I know like people kind of get on Rosen. There's, you know, he's a, you know, very confident kid and all that kind of stuff. But I thought it was kind of neat the way he needled him back a little bit at that one. So that was good.
Yeah. I thought that was really, really good.
Let's see. So we had no other, I thought we had some more email questions there.
There's a couple, but I want to kind of save them.
Okay.
For your own shows, since we're already running an hour right now. Again, they're all research questions. Our man Anthony asks if we can cover in detail the best season for each Pac-12 team in the last 20 years. and then we've got Otis, who asks, "Hi, Ryan and Dave, love the podcast. Since USC just played in the Rose Bowl, can you both list the top three Rose Bowl games that USC and UCLA have been in?" Which I just don't want to do because the last game UCLA won in the Rose Bowl was 1986. But I would say 66, 76, and 86, if you want my answer.
Okay.
I did do a little bit of research.
I moved to LA in 89, so UCLA has not won a Rose Bowl since I moved here.
UCLA last won a Rose Bowl when I was a little over a month old.
Yet they beat USC a whole bunch of times in between then, but just for whatever reason.
Yeah, they've played in Rose Bowls. They keep running into like Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah, that's going crazy. Bob wanted to know, does the current gap in time between podcasts indicate that the other Scout Pac-12 publishers did not want to do shows on spring training, or is it just apathy, or Woods' at-home dad responsibilities limiting his availability? No, I think it's a lot of things. It wasn't anything about the rest of the Pac-12 publishers. It's just Dave and I have to kind of get off our asses and
I think apathy probably hits closest to home. Definitely a healthy dose of number three, too. not a lot of that. You know, time is crunch at the end of the day. But, you know, it's we've got to actually work for it at this point.
Yeah.
You know, during the season, we don't have to work for it because there's stuff happening, right? But right now, like, if we have to sit down and do a podcast, like, we've gone an hour, and this is good, but we're, like, we're pretty much tapped out now. There's not a whole lot else to talk about.
Yeah.
But if you do this during the season, we'll go an hour and a half, and it's easy. And this is, you know, this is the first thing we've done in, what, like, I mean, aside from recap in spring in 3 months, and we've got enough to get through about an hour. And, you know, we'll see what we can come up with for weeks coming. We did get a couple of good ideas for topics, but it's just, you know, if there isn't a whole lot going on, we don't want to fill up your eardrums with nonsense.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be our desire in life.
And if you have more ideas, certainly let us know. You know, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. And we do, it's not like, I think Dave and I both enjoy doing it. We wouldn't do it if we didn't like doing it. Yeah. But it takes time, and you have to like schedule it and, you know, around everything else. It's not, you know, and it's not always the highest priority, I guess. Especially
I think
in the offseason.
Yeah.
It's not like, I like doing it. You know, we did.
Not everyone. We get paid no money. To
yeah. Right.
This specific thing, we get paid no money. No. Zero, $0. $0 are changing hands right now.
Yeah. We do pay a little bit out for it, but that's about it. Or I do. And then
Ryan is paying money to bring you this beautiful content right now.
Well, that's, you sell me a beer next time I see you, Dave. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. There we go. I think by this point, I mean, you've probably put enough money into it over the last, I probably owe you like a 12 pack.
That's all right. We had a good time. We did the one show. We did that show in Westwood. That was kind of fun.
That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll be doing the show soon.
Maybe we can try to, I don't know. We'll have to talk about Pac-12 Media Day. Looks like it's going to be July 26th and 27th. I think our buddy Brandon sent that out. I haven't got anything official from the Pac-12 yet. But yeah, we can get some guests and stuff around then maybe and, you know, do some fun stuff.
Yeah, for sure. We should absolutely do that.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. Isn't a nice, fun Q&A.
Yeah, that was
episode.
Fun.
Yeah.
Please send us more questions.
Yeah, send us stuff. Maybe stuff we don't have to research for a couple weeks before that we're more likely to answer them. Diving into history, but we'll try to get some information on the rivalry stuff. Or if you have, you know, what's important to you. And, you know, whatever team you follow, and, you know, playing your rival, anything about the history, if you want to email us or send us a voicemail, we can use that as a point of discussion or, you know, let other people know what you're thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we can get the other publishers on to talk about their rivals.
Yeah, that'd be great. All right. I guess we'll wrap it up. That's David Woods from Bruin Report Online. I'm Ryan Abraham, USAFootball.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions, and we will talk to you next time.